and peace from God our Father and our Lord Jesus Christ. From beautiful Hotel Candelaria in Antigua, Guatemala, my name is Sean Smith, and on behalf of myself and my beautiful wife, Damaris, hello. Welcome to Now Is the Time. It's my privilege to welcome to the Mobile Pro Podcast booth, Stove Crew number 4, numero 4. I'm going to have the crew introduce themselves, starting with Brooke.
My name is Brooke Fonseca, and I'm from Sunnyvale, California.
I'm Lydia Fonseca from Sunnyvale, California.
I'm Clayton Fonseca from Sunnyvale, California.
I'm Stephanie Tapia from San Jose, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast booth. It's good to see you all. Welcome back to Guatemala. Thank you. I see smiling faces, satisfied stomachs. You're still laughing at my error that I just tried to erase earlier on. It's really great to have you all back here. This week, this year, this is a totally new experience for all of us, new site today. Tell me about how this site and your day-to-day is different from previous years coming to serve in Guatemala.
Well, this is similar to the first year that I was in Guatemala, speaking of the terrain. Because the first year I was here, 2 years ago, it was, that was the Hogar Miguel going to orphanage, and we were doing stoves, and we did a fair amount of hiking that year. And this year, we did a fair amount of hiking. it's probably some of the steepest slopes we've ever walked. But the town is called Buena Vista, meaning beautiful view, and it very much is a beautiful view. So, and the, I guess the one other thing that stood out to me is I've noticed some fair-skinned local people.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Even in our VBS, there was this little girl. She may have been 3 years old, and she was this fair complected and lighter hair, not blonde, but much lighter. And, you know, a couple times I had to take a double take, make sure it wasn't my little daughter, you know. Mm.
Yeah, I saw it too. I was like, whoa, where'd she come from? Yeah. I was like, is she one of us?
Yeah. But another similarity is just the people are just so warm and loving and hospitable and, so, yeah, it was a good day.
The kids are really shy.
Are they? Yeah. More shy here. Isn't that interesting?
I think this site is more like Paso y Paso. Mm-hmm. Like, the kids are more shy, just, like, the whole setting, like, in the town. Because, like, Hogar Miguel is, like, all the kids are, like, always on top of you, always, like, come here with me, holding your hand, hugging you, and these kids are keeping their distance. I, like, try to talk to a few of them, and like to smile at me, or a few of them talked, but I mean, it's very different to Hogar Miguel.
So Hogar Miguel, for those who don't know, is an orphanage, a home that we have been to many times, and they get lots of groups. They get lots of outside groups that come in, and so the kids are really accustomed to strangers and to getting a lot of love from people who they don't know. But this is this village does not have that many visitors, and I don't think it has that many visitors, American or Guatemalan. I mean, it is way up there in the middle of nowhere, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's an interesting observation. Much more shy, reserved. How about you, Stephanie?
Yeah, well, I agree that I think they started off being really shy, and then as sort of VBS progressed, they sort of opened up a little bit more, and they were a lot more energetic towards the end. But yeah, and it was really interesting having the parents there. I don't remember having parents like there the entire time before, so that was really interesting.
Quite a few moms, but a few dads too. I think it may be the first time I've seen any men. Mm-hmm. We always invite the parents to come with the kids, but they usually don't take us up on it. But there was how many moms do you think or parents do you think were there today?
Really? Maybe 20.
Like 20, 30.
Yeah, quite a few. Mm-hmm. Stephanie, you work with kids a lot. just in your own family.
Yeah.
what were some of your observations of the kids? Like you had mentioned, they grew a little bit more comfortable. When you describe the children of Guatemala to people outside of this mission, how do you describe them?
They're very friendly, or at least most of them are. I think knowing, once they know that you speak Spanish, they feel a little bit more confident. They're like, I can talk to this person, and they're actually going to understand. Yeah, they're very friendly. They can ask a lot of questions sometimes. They like want to know things, or they just want to make sure that they're doing things the right way. So they're always attentive to what you're doing, and they want to know, and they want to do it the way that you want them to do it, and they want to show it to you, and they want to sort of make you proud of what it is that they're doing. And
what kind of questions do they ask?
Well, today for crafts, they were just asking, you know, how do we do this? Do we do it like this, or can we do it this way, or what am I supposed to do with this? Or can I get something else? Or where is this? Or where is that? Yeah. They were just, a lot of them came and they were showing me the craft and they were sort of asking, is this the right way? Or is it okay that I did it a little bit differently than the picture that you have? And it was just, you know, telling them that it looked nice and that they could keep it, because a lot of them were asking, like, what do I do with it? It's like, oh, well, you can keep it. And they were like, oh, okay. And they got to take it home.
It's a foreign experience. I mean, most of these kids have never been to a Bible school like this. So it doesn't surprise me that they're not sure, well, how does this work? You know, like, what's the system? What's the plan? It sounds like they're very interested in pleasing you and doing it correctly and making sure they're following the rules, if you will. Yes. How about you, Clayton? Impression of the kids?
Like I said, they're a lot more shy, but they will warm up to you. And they're always smiling. And it's weird. It's like all the older boys, like in America, they would not do the crafts. But here, they get really into it.
And yeah, that is different. And some of the moms want to get in on it, too. Tell me about some of the homes that you visited today, some of the families. Do you, anything memorable, anything stick out for you? Other than the hills? Mountains, not a hill. It's a mountain.
Yeah. Well, we were fortunate enough to do two stoves that were literally next door to one another.
Wow.
We heard that there was a storm or a typhoon a few years back that destroyed a lot of the homes, and so there's a lot of newer cinder block homes, but these two homes were, I guess, traditional. I mean, there were no cinder block walls. It was either wood siding or cane siding, and of course the corrugated steel roof, things like that. One we went into, and I asked our photographer, Christina, because she's done a lot of stoves, way more than we have. I said, is this position for the stove okay? And she goes, yeah, look at over there. There's like a big hole in the wall. There's plenty of draft coming in, you know. And so for me, I had a certain expectation of maybe nicer homes, but these were very, very humble homes, but the families were very sweet. It looked like maybe it was a family compound, so it seemed like everybody knew one another really well, living close to one another. And the first stove we did was for an older lady, and the second stove we did was for a younger lady, and the older lady came over after we finished the second stove and brought a little gift of a little ceramic, it would look like a little pot, but it was decorative. It was nice, and put it down on the wing of the stove and basically said, kind of, kind of congratulations for your new stove. It was a really neat gesture.
So the gift was for her neighbor.
Yeah.
Wow. Beautiful.
Yeah, it was.
How would you describe, I know you're probably only in the kitchen area of the homes, but how would you describe either of these two homes to someone who's not been here before?
Yeah, like, we only went to, like, the kitchen area. Actually, the living area we didn't go in to. It was more off to the side. But, yeah, it was just kind of, like, had a few walls up around it and, like, a roof, but, like, my dad said there's, like, just, like, wood on the walls and the, what's the metal sheet called?
The corrugated?
Yeah, that has walls, too. Yeah, and just, like, hard-packed dirt. And the first one we went, there was no furniture at all. And then the second one had a table in the corner with some stuff on it. But other than that, nothing really.
Nothing on the walls? You remember seeing anything? Mm-hmm.
Just like a couple baskets.
Couple baskets.
Oh, yeah, there was a few baskets.
It's a kitchen, so pots, pans, cooking utensils.
It seemed like they kind of cleared the area out.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was in preparation for a group to come in and do the work, but...
I didn't really see any.
Yeah, both of the rooms were kind of vacant. I think one of them had, like, a small shelf in one corner. Maybe it was the second one had a shelf and a table. There were a few things there.
I think there's a few, like, maybe bowls or something stacked in the corner of the table, but other than that, nothing.
Yeah, they were... yeah, they were pretty much cleared out, and I don't know if that was in preparation for us or not, but I mean, I was telling a story of we did a stove 2 years ago, and the matron of the house was cooking, and she wanted to finish cooking her meal even though we were there to install the stove. And so, I mean, it was a fully functioning kitchen. There was, you know, food stores in there, and there was dishes and all of that, and
lots of stuff everywhere.
Yeah, and it was just you know, where she did her daily business of cooking, and so completely different situation.
And that she was cooking over an open fire.
She was cooking over an open fire, and she
smoked us out.
Yeah,
I was the one to cut the hole in the roof, and I had to. There was about a 6 to 8 inch layer of smoke at the top. And as soon as I cut the hole, it created an updraft, and then all the smoke gathered there. So I had to come down, let it clear a little bit, cut a little more, come down, let it clear. It took a while, but that was that situation, which was not this year. It was a few years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to imagine, isn't it? I mean, breathing that, cooking over that. Uh-huh. I'm going to say this is a very spiritual group sitting at this table. And I've had, particularly with Brooke and Stephanie, I've had some deep spiritual conversations with that I've treasured. And I haven't had the privilege to speak in that level of conversation with Lydia or Clayton yet, but I look forward to those days someday. Maybe we can start today. Tell me a little bit about where or how you see God moving in these places. Tell me about some of the gray areas. You know, we often think in terms of black and white, in terms of you know, we are the ones helping, and they're the ones who are satisfied. And those of us who have been doing this a while know that it's more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. That there's a whole range of emotions and spiritual journeys that happen through these missions. Can you share some of your thoughts on some of those spiritual journeys that you've been down throughout these missions?
trying to give opportunity for other people to speak.
No, I'm like trying to think of something.
Something that's stuck with me since you and Damaris went to our church was when, like, towards the end she was saying that it's not like God is giving you an option that you should maybe consider coming and serving. Like, he said, go and serve the poor. Like, it's very clear. And how, you know, when you're sitting at home and you're thinking, should I go? It's not, you don't think that way. And it's like, but it's really that simple. It's just like, you're supposed to be doing this versus, well, maybe I have something to do that week, or I'm busy, or you just come up with so many excuses versus just letting go and saying, okay, I know that I need to do this and I should get over there. But yeah, that's something that I thought a lot about after she said that.
Has that been a struggle for you, Stephanie? Because it doesn't appear to be a struggle for you.
Well,
you appear to me to be very called.
I mean, sometimes it is. It's like you have to, I think about it a little bit, and then it's like, what are you thinking about? Like, there's not much thinking, right? And it's just like sort of giving that last push of just do it versus waiting. Thinking about it and thinking, oh, maybe not, and then other people around you are also like, what are you thinking about? Like, you should go. And so it's just like sort of the reinforcement that, you know, sometimes you're just not sure, and then God's like sending you all these people that are like, this is what you should be doing, and then sort of back on track.
Yeah, some of the struggles that Damaris and I have had is, the more we do this, you'd think the more you do this, the easier it would get, right? And in some ways it is. I mean, we have great, awesome people like you who come, and that makes it far easier for us than trying to work with new people and we don't know where they're at. They don't know how we work. It takes a long time to build a working relationship to be efficient, right? So in that way, it's easy. But the call gets harder. Like, that you feel called to do more. You're more efficient, but then you can do more. You can help more people, and you get tired, and you think, this is hard. You know, like this year we went to new places, and that's really hard, starting new with new systems, new people, trying to figure out how to do things. But one of the things that Damaris has said, and maybe it was the same time when she was saying this at your church, is when she's feeling like, look, we can't do this. I mean, this is impossible. This is really hard. She said, either we have to go and do what God calls us to do, or we need to change our religion, because it's pretty black and white. I mean, there's literally a book with black ink on a white page that says we are called to serve the poor, to love and serve the poor. Like, if you don't want to do that, that's fine, but then you should really be worshiping some other god, because this God tells us this is who we are to love and serve. And not like you said, it's simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. I mean, it's not complicated. This is who we are as Christians. And if you don't want to be a Christian, okay, then you're not obligated to do that. But sometimes that makes it easier when you know that, I don't have a choice. Like you said, I don't have a choice. This is what I'm called to do. And I know for us, we always feel a whole lot better when we do say yes and accept that. And then it's far easier than what we had ever worried or dreamed it would be.
Yeah, I think for me, service has just been something that we've always done. Even the church that we attend and Stephanie attends with us, the reason we decided to start attending that church is because of their service to the community. And so it just wasn't an inward looking fellowship. It was even has gone through persecution because they chose to do things that blessed other people.
As opposed to blessing themselves?
Yeah, I mean...
As a church?
Yeah, so you can hold an event with the hopes that it'll bring people into your pews. And we've held purposefully held events without that metric, without that requirement for us. We just want to love. We just want to bless. And if people show up, that's great. That's not why we're doing it. We have an English as a second language class. It runs 9 months of the year. And I think I've only known of one family that actually now attends our church. There may be more from different iterations of that, but but we serve probably 70 to 100 families a year. And we give them a better opportunity to make a life in America. And so...
With the goal being to help them, not to grow your own church.
Exactly. And so, you know, so Guatemala is an extension of that, just internationally. And, you know, I felt pretty satisfied with what we were doing at home. And I've said this year after year that my kids dragged me to Guatemala. and so there may be some sort of, I guess not reluctance, but like, I'm okay. You know, I'm, you know, I've been there, I've done that. Yeah. I know how all this works. And, but then I come here and I'm like, why would I even second guess coming? Why would I even question myself? Of course I would come and bring my kids. And of course, I hope someday that my whole family, all seven of us, come. That would...
We do too.
That would be a miracle, but, you know...
Miracles happen.
They do. And so I guess part of my journey is getting over my anxiety, getting over myself, getting over, you know, I don't need to do this. Maybe even so much as I'm not needed. But then when I get there, either to our community classes... You know, I realize I get there and I'm vital. I get here and I realize I'm vital. And it's not a pat on my own back. It's just a realization that that this is an important thing to do. It matters. And I guess in some ways I would be not only shortchanging the people we get to serve, but I'm also shortchanging myself.
Mm. Amen. Clayton and Lydia, you all did some fundraising, talking about serving and sacrifice. And I mean, you're getting older. You have a lot more options of your time, things that you could be doing. It's hard raising money. And tell me about that experience.
I mean, like... Like, deciding to come is, like...
Easy.
It's not. Like, the first year, I was kind of like... So many years, we wanted to come. And then you're like, okay, we're going. Like, oh, like, we're really actually going? Like, okay. But then, like, the first time we came, like, I fell in love with this place. Like, I have to come back and help the people here.
As soon as you got on the airplane, you miss it.
Yeah.
Oh, to go back as soon as you get on
like,
the plane to go back,
I'm gonna wait a whole year. But I just love it here. I love the people here and the culture, the community. It's just really awesome.
Well, I really appreciated your Facebook pages and entries and telling people, showing pictures from previous years that you've been and sharing that with those that are were considering, you know, sponsoring you guys to come and that. You know, often when people leave here, we don't know what they think, what memories they hold or what photos they hold. But you guys have some great pictures and stories from previous years.
Yeah.
Did you get any feedback from that? Or it was the first, I don't know, maybe you guys do the Facebook campaign every year, but it was the first time I had seen it.
No, this is the first year we did a lot of Facebook. I mean, usually like the week before, like, we're going to Guatemala, but... usually we just did, like, written letters, but we ran out of time to do that. It's like, oh, I'm going to just do Facebook. So, yeah, we didn't get too much feedback. I mean, we got some likes and a few comments, but not too much. But, yeah, I heard people say, like, we like looking at your stuff. But, Yeah, it was nice.
I have a few ideas for next year. Yeah. some ways to make it a little more user-friendly.